truth seeker of the far north, down to slightly more than 13 hours of daylight from 19 and a half hours on June 21st. And if you hear a bit of a lisp, I have lost one of my two front teeth again. So the dentist has been off on vacation, so I have a dentist that works in Eagle River for a lot less than the average Joe's. So anyway, you may hear a little bit of a occasional word problem with me, as I it's interesting how you how you learn to speak when you have both teeth up front to do whatever you're doing. Anyway, I'm going to get into cover several issues this hour and the next hour. And I just confirmed it looks like next Sunday I will have on Dr. Judy Woods. I had been contacted by a fellow a couple of times, and somehow I didn't grab anything that looked like it was valid, and I just didn't take enough time because I get so many emails in, and it's hard to pick out the ones that have validity, you know, or something, you know, and you just get so busy you don't have a lot of time. But I went in and I looked at a couple of things that just really caught my interest. First of all, that there was a hurricane off of New York at the time of the Twin Towers, 911. And I said, well, there is an interesting thing, Irwin. And the other issue that initially caught my interest is that there wasn't enough material left over from... How did that happen? Those are two very important, valid issues that aren't in the la-la land. And if you validate those, then you most definitely have to listen to the rest of what she's got to say. So anyway, I hear the music. We'll be back, and then we're going to start in on some interesting issues, including I got some comments about our good money system.
We're back from break here. Finally got Skype and everything all figured out here. Waiting for Dr. Judy Wood. I thought she was going to be calling in today here, but haven't heard from her yet. I don't have her phone number, so we'll wait and see if she calls in, or maybe something happened today and she can't make it. I was hoping that she could, because, boy, she's got a really interesting web page. Absolutely astounding about what happened at 911. So, anyway, I guess we'll proceed forward here and see if she calls in. Like I say, she hasn't called in, so I'm not sure. Anyway, it's fall in Alaska. It's, God, it's only about 50 degrees up here, and the trees are already turned, and man, it's just absolutely astounding how quick we get. A week ago, there wasn't anything golden. All the leaves up here were green, and now I'm looking out the window here, and I don't see hardly one green leaf. It's all turned, and probably in another week, with a little wind here, the leaves will all be gone. Absolutely astounding. So anyway, I won't cover the issues until she calls in. If she doesn't, why, then we'll try to schedule her again. Or maybe, like I say, something came up. We got some astounding information to cover on the IRS. It just, I'm telling you, it's, it boggles the mind anymore. I sent out to my special list, I sent out an email to, that covered by law. And it's amazing how you can change one word from by statute to by law and have such a tremendous effect. It's all over in the Internal Revenue Code. You see it's also used in the other agencies. And somebody had sent me, one of the listeners had sent me the link to where, because I had put out the information that the Attorney General's Manual of 1947 is still used. They still use it because it was instrumental and was at the same time frame as the 1946 Administrative Procedures Act. And this case... the first one that I've ever, I think I got the case here. I hadn't planned on it, but I'll look here and see, is the first case that I have found that somebody had sent me where they actually overturned. I got to check and make sure I got the right case here because I wasn't going to do this. I thought we were going to have a guest today. They actually overturned a criminal conviction based on the publication in the Federal Register. And I could not believe this. I'm not sure I got the right case here yet or not, but I'm looking for it. But I think it's a Tenth Circuit case, Rowell, R-O-W-E-L-L, United States versus, let's see, Rowell versus Andrus, A-N-D-R-U-S. And it's 631 F2D 699. And something that I was very much aware of, that most people, I hope we're starting to get people to look at this, is that we are being ruled by legal notice by the Federal Register. The agencies live in the Federal Register. There is absolutely no doubt. I just got 14 more cases I went through, and I'm going to be putting together a module, and I'll be posting those cases with a lot of that information here this next couple days. But this criminal case was based, got reversed on the publication or the lack of publication in the Federal Register that they didn't wait 30 days. And the whole key to all of these regulations that all of these agencies, every living last one of them, is 5 U.S.C. 553. And there are two aspects to this, and I hadn't actually zeroed in on this second one to the significance of it. But to get a criminal conviction overturned based on publications, a publication in the Federal Register is absolutely astounding. I'd never seen one before, and I've been looking for it. Now I got all kinds of information. I'm going to be looking for more of these as we come along here. But I guess Judy's online here. I didn't see this. So, Judy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Yes, okay. This is Dr. Judy Wood here, and she has a Ph.D., and I was just astounded when I went to her webpage. I had seen a little information from a couple of sources, and I thought it's crackpot, and I just didn't spend any more time at it. And then I got another email, and I thought, well, let me go in and spend a few minutes here. And I went in there, and I said, oh, my God, this can't be so. I know they've been lying to us. But anyway, I don't have your page up now, but you have a tremendous not only have a Ph.D., but in physics and that. So maybe you could give us just a brief description of your background, and then – if you would give us an overview of some of the issues that people can point to, and then you can cover those, and we'll sit back and listen, and I'll ask a few questions.
Great. Let's see. I have my bachelor's degree in civil engineering, structural engineering, master's degree in engineering mechanics, which is like applied physics, and a Ph.D. in materials engineering science, which focused on engineering mechanics problems. My area of expertise is interferometry, using interference of optical beams to look at deformation of materials characterization. So very much a forensics engineer. And I'm trained to observe and look at the evidence and see what the evidence tells you. And I strongly believe that if you look at the evidence and listen to it carefully, it will tell you exactly what happened. If you don't know what happened, you need to listen more. And you keep looking at the evidence until it becomes self-evident what happened.
Okay. Go ahead.
I would like to start out with, you know, making a statement for the record. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that our government is responsible for executing the events of 9/11. But I also don't believe our government is not responsible for executing the events of 9/11. This is not a case of belief. This is a crime that should be solved by a forensic study of the evidence. Before we can determine who did it, we must first determine what was done, what happened, and how it was done. And, you know, let's remember what's required to convict someone of a crime in a court of law. You cannot convict someone of a crime based on belief. That's a witch hunt. You cannot convict someone of a crime if you don't even know what crime to charge them with. If you accuse someone of murder using a gun, you'd better be sure that the body has at least a bullet hole in it. And what we, you know, yet, you know, 9/11 before noon, we were told who done it before any investigation was conducted about what was done.
Does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, those people say 9/11 was an inside job. What they're stating is they studied what was done, how it was done, in order to establish who done it. But I don't believe anyone has done the first two steps, including NIST.
I haven't seen it done either. That's why it was so shocking, all of the things that I was looking at. I won't take your thunder away. You can bring those up when you want to, but, you know, but go ahead.
Oh, no, there's more than 2 hours worth, like weeks and months worth. If anyone has been to my website, the website just grew and grew until it was bursting at the seams, and it's really too large. I've been meaning to put in a new front page that someone made for me, and it's called the new page, but I haven't done that yet because people are probably still used to where to find things. But there is a page that's a very good overview. It's the WTC Cliff Notes page. Or you go to my website, drjudywood.com. That's D-R-J-U-D-Y-W-O-O-D, four letters, drjudywood.com/WTC. And that will take you right to it. And there's a whole host of things on that page. It's like some of everything. But most importantly, there's a list of evidence that needs to be explained. So whatever, you know, conclusion someone wants to come to, it needs to deal with this list of evidence. You know, if you say that somebody shot the body to death, well, shot somebody to death, but the body doesn't have any bullet holes in it, it doesn't matter if this person owns a gun. You know, if the person is dead for some other reason. So you need to start out, you know, here's what we can observe, all the different categories of evidence. And there's quite a few. And the most obvious one that no one really seems to deal with, or few deal with, is where did the buildings go?
That was the one that grabbed me first. Where did the buildings go?
It's just an empty field. Matter of fact, there was 14 people who survived in Stairwell B. Trapped in there for several hours and then came out. And one of them described coming out onto an empty football field.
Okay, hold that thought, Dr. Wood. We're going into a break and we'll be back and we're going to find out where the buildings went. Maybe. Back from break here, we got Dr. Wood and talking about 9/11 and where did the buildings go and how much is missing? Go ahead, Dr. Wood.
Most of it's missing. There's some interesting pictures of, you know, that were taken from West Street, which is on the west side of the complex, like right outside the front door, where the front door was of Tower 1. Yet Tower 1 isn't there, down to ground level. And that picture was taken before noon on 9/11, or around noon, you can see from the shadows. And you know what day it is because Building 7 is still standing in the background. And you should have Tower 1 blocking the view.
You would think, wouldn't you?
And there's an ambulance that was parked right outside the door. It's still parked there, but there's no building. It doesn't
so
appear
did the
very.
Go?
Damn it! It turned to dust. It was like Camelot. You know the scene where I think Guinevere says, "Oh, I suppose all the leaves fall into neat little piles," and I think Lancelot then says something like, "Yes, and they blow away at night, of course." That's what happened to the buildings. They just blew away in the breeze. You know, the fuming that we saw for months, I believe that was part of the building. That was the material turning into nano-sized particles and just floating away.
Well, I noticed in the video that when it was coming down that it looked like one of those, that the whole bunch of the iron structures, the steel, was still standing. But then all of a sudden, when it gets all through, they aren't there.
Right. There's a photo looking from north of the tower, looking south, where Tower 1 is going poof. I don't say collapse. I say poof, just as a generic term for some process that we're not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And you see these, I call them wheat checks, the prefab sections of steel. They're three columns wide and three stories tall that the building was made out of. You see some of these flying through the air, and then right afterwards, there's a picture of the intersection, and there's only paper there. Paper and dust. No solid pieces. But we just saw in the video that the material, solid material coming down, but it melts like ice cream on the way down.
This sounds like Star Wars.
Well, I refer to the Star Wars program that, you know, what did they research and develop in that program? And what did other countries research and develop in a similar program?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that whoever studied it in our program knows what, you know, they probably get a scoop behind the scenes of what other countries are capable of. But we don't really know of any new technology since Hiroshima. But obviously, they didn't stop the research and development department, you know, in 1945.
How much rubble is missing?
I don't know exactly, but I think it's safe to say at least 80%. And actually, I did a calculation of the seismic impact. If you remove the top 80% of the building and then the bottom 20% fell and, you know, like controlled demolition or whatever, fell, it would make the seismic signal that we actually had recorded.
Out of the missing material, signal, is it? Oh, go ahead.
How much missing material? That's a scenario where 80% of the material would be missing, and that's what it kind of looks like.
Is a missing material 80%. Composed of cement, the cement stuff, or the iron more than the other, you think, or?
Everything. There isn't a single toilet or part of a toilet at the site. There was probably at least 2,000 toilets in those buildings. And we don't even see one, you know, fragment of a toilet that's recognizable. And that's something you recognize at every junkyard.
Do you think there are any people that were missing out of this, too, totally?
Any people missing?
Yes, when this happened.
Yeah, there's, you know, of course, DNA that was identified. And the DNA that was identified, you know, roughly 1,500 or 1,600 bodies, it could be counted for by the number of jumpers, as well as the number of firefighters. No more. So what
did
about all the people who were left in the building?
Where did they go?
To dust?
Did they find the jet engines that are indestructible? Did they find those?
Not to my knowledge. There's been no positive identification made on any plane parts or, you know, black boxes or anything else that we would expect. But here we have two 110-story buildings. We have a 22-story building. We have an 8-story building. We have a 47-story building. And also another 9-story building where the majority of the building goes AWOL.
Wow. Hold that thought. We'll be back just a minute.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Back from break here, and I got Dr. Wood on talking about 9/11. And got a caller here that has a question about any NASA connections to the events, satellite activity, and the molecular disintegration that obviously happened. And I watched one of the videos, and it looked to me like in one of those pictures, I was seeing a vertical I-beam just taken off and disintegrating into dust right before my eyes.
Right. It's referred to as the spire. It's a cluster of core columns that's left hanging from Tower 1. And from the pictures, you know that Building 7 is 47 stories, and this tower is well above Building 7. So I'm guessing it's like 70 stories tall, around 800 feet tall. In order for columns 800 feet tall to be freestanding, we know they're strong and rigid. And then if they fell over, because they're unsupported, if they fell over, they'd take out a few city blocks. They'd slice some buildings in half. So they do some big damage. But they didn't fall over and hit some other building. There's no matter what it even appears as, there's no other explanation other than what we apparently see is it turning to dust. And that needs to be explained. Incidentally, those core columns appear to be right above that zone where those 14 people survived in the stairwell B, which was in the center of the building, which I thought was kind of interesting. The other question about a NASA connection. I'm not looking at whodunit at all. I'm looking at what happened. And so, it doesn't matter what NASA did or didn't do at this point. But there are some satellite images that are pretty interesting. There's one that was taken a week or so after the event, looking straight down, and you can see cylindrical holes cut out of the adjacent buildings. But like a big post hole digger removed sections of building. Approximately 50% of the mass of Building 6 has been removed. It's just an empty hole inside. Mighty bizarre.
Yes, and we've heard conflicting things about the molten metal and all that, and I was looking and from NASA up above, what's your take on that as far as the temperature?
I look at physical evidence, the most direct evidence, and there's no indication of molten metal. Matter of fact, to the contrary. For example, why didn't the paper burn? We have all sorts of unburned paper. Also, with this, big dust cloud chasing people down the street, we've seen those pictures.
Yes.
When the cloud overtook the people and passed them by, you ended up with people covered in dust and coughing on the dust. You didn't have a pile of burned bodies. And some of the eyewitnesses have described the temperature of the dust cloud initially being cooler than ambient temperature. Also, on the afternoon of, around noon or just after noon on 9/11, a water main broke in West Street, and it turned into a lake. And the lake covered all the way up to Building 3, or the remnants of Building 3. And there's pictures of firefighters walking around, you know, wading out, and they're knee-deep, thigh-deep. They don't look like boiled chicken. If this was molten metal underneath, I mean, can you store molten metal in your swimming pool? Chernobyl exploded because of water hitting something very hot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got another. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have a couple other questions here, and then we'll zero in. The two other things that all of these cars, all of these odd things that happen to the cars, different vehicles and things. And the first question that popped into my mind is, how close were all of these cars that to the proximity of what the where the action was? And then all of these unexplained things that happens. Part of a car is there and part of a car isn't, or maybe an engine's missing. But the first one is, how far away were cars affected in the picture that you have on your page?
There's a parking lot that's about a quarter mile away. And then there's over on the east side of Manhattan, right on the East River, right on the road right underneath FDR Drive, there's a bunch of them there. And that's about a half mile away or a little bit more. There's a cluster of them there. And eyewitnesses there, you know, saw the cars exhibit spontaneous combustion. And people try to fit things into their known framework. So they were assuming that there had to be a fireball that rolled down the street from the World Trade Center and caught the cars on fire. Because why else would these cars suddenly catch on fire? But the pattern on those cars, doesn't matter where they're parked, the pattern on them is really bizarre, and that is what told me it had to be a type of energy field. There's this toasted car. I call it toasted. It's history. It's, you know, it can't be fixed. It's like, you know, something's toast. It's history. It's gone. It's not necessarily fire caused it, but it looks like it. But that's why I use this generic term, toasted. So it's toasted on the side of this passenger door, but there's this circular spot with a new wax job in the middle of that. And, you know, normal fires don't abruptly stop in one nanometer over, no trace of fire at all. You have black, white, and shades of gray. There's a gradient. But in this car, there was no gradient. And on the other side of it, it's completely toasted up to the front door, and then abruptly, the back door on backward from there, it's got a new wax job, pristine condition. That's not a normal fire. The inside of that car, the hump that goes over the drive shaft, uh-huh, has these little pinholes in the steel, something like eight out the steel. Well, you know, the back of the car is in pristine condition. It's just absolutely bizarre. And the door kind of, on the police car in front of that one is sags. There's just some really weird things. There's some cars in a parking lot about a quarter mile away that there's a row of them, and there's one, you know, there's car one, and then two, three, and four are different than car five. So car one and car five look like they're the same make. Not same model, but same make. And there's just no engine in them. It's just gone. But cars in between don't have their engine missing. You know, bizarre things like that.
Well, this could have nothing to do with the normal constraints of what we think happened at 9/11. Absolutely. Especially that they're distance away.
This is not seen in anything else either. And the West Broadway, I call it the swamp because it was, you know, flooded with water to put out, presumably to put out the car fires, sometime in the middle of the day, because there's pictures where Building 7 is still standing, that every car down that street on both sides was toasted. But no trees were toasted. No paper was toasted. There's photos
wow.
where paper is not burning right next to a card that appears to be, you know, inflamed. There's a particular picture that is really bizarre. That folks say, oh, well, it must have been the debris that fell on the car to catch it on fire. Well, does the debris come with a locksmith? Because it's burning on the inside of the car, not the outside. Yeah, explain
wow.
that one.
It isn't possible.
The other thing with that particular picture is that it looks like it's taken at midnight, but we know it was taken during the time one of the towers went poof. So what does that tell you? It was pitch black. That takes 100% blockage of the sun. Eyewitnesses said they couldn't see their hand in front of them. They didn't know if they're indoors or outdoors. Imagine what it takes to block out the sunlight.
Wow.
Fine particles, enough fine particles to completely block the sun. That's pretty amazing.
Now,
in regular controlled demolitions, the dust mm-hmm. doesn't go any higher than, you know, really much higher than the top of the initial standing structure.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go up. It goes down.
Mm-hmm. How long does the dust last at 9/11 there?
Well, the official line is 99 days. And, you know, the cover story was that it's fires for 99 days, but there's no evidence of that. There's things that look like fire, but it's not quite. It's like this toasted car that is in pristine condition adjacent to a place that looks totally toasted. We see, you know, something that's glowing, that appears to be glowing hot, but it cannot be hot because it's sitting on paper. It's not burning. If you had you know, a piece of iron that was glowing white hot, it has to be over 1,200 degrees centigrade. Paper is going to be burned up by then.
Absolutely.
Now, paper combusts at a pretty low temperature, but I think everyone will admit there's, you know, sea of paper all over the place.
And it's not burning.
Correct. There's another interesting myth of, you know, the steel-toed boots melting. And I think this is a case of, you know, people need answers. So many weird things going on. They need answers. As soon as they're given an answer, they quit asking questions. And they don't think about the answer, if it makes sense, because they got so many decisions that are going on in their life at that moment, they don't think about it. So, you know, apparently the steel-toed boots were disintegrating, and they were told that they were melting. But think about it. There are no reports of burned feet or cooked feet inside those boots. How could you have steel-toed boots melting? If your oven was melting, don't you think the chicken inside would be, you know, burn up?
More than so.
So you stop and think of, you know, the evidence. It doesn't make sense. But so many people are just, you know, needed an answer and just ran with it.
So we got a building that's missing maybe 80% of the rubble. We have
at least
cars.
80%.
Pardon?
At least 80%.
And we have cars that aren't even in close proximity that are, as you say, toasted or all sorts of weird things happening that aren't even close to the building. We got people's boots, the steel-toed boots that are melting. How about
they're told they're melting, yeah.
And then why don't we, two other things that really caught my attention is the speed of gravity and then about a hurricane. I couldn't believe there was a hurricane sitting there.
But building four, nobody gives it any attention. Four building four gets neglected. The main body of building four went missing. It's not there, down to the ground. You can sweep it up with a broom, probably. There's a few weed checks on top of it. But that's supposedly where the top of Tower 2, when we saw it start to tip, it would have landed on building four. but it never landed. It turned to dust in midair. So nothing landed on Building 4, but Building 4 disappeared.
How big was Building 4?
It was a 9-story building.
Mm-hmm.
And the main body of it just totally disappeared, and it looked cut off with an X-Acto knife, where the north wing is still there. And you could look in and see what's on somebody's desk, you know, where that sliced open spot.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, fires don't do that. Collapses don't do that.
No.
Another
I
weird
listen.
Thing is that building looked like it was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
It's glowing, but there's these flags, row of flags right outside the windows that never caught on fire.
Wow. I listened to Jesse Ventura. I watched his little short video there. He's got about a 3-minute video, and he was a SEAL and trained in the demolitions, and it said this never happened. Absolutely never happened, like they're trying to tell us.
Right, right. And at least some people are out there thinking and saying, this doesn't add up. Another weird thing is the round holes in windows of adjacent buildings. Round holes, or circular-ish, you know, like oval. I don't think you could get a glass cutter to make such a nice hole, especially when it's a double-pane window and only the outer pane has the round hole in it. And the inner pane is still intact.
You're kidding.
Explain that one.
Wow. You know, I better get some... Maybe I should get some gin or something here, because this is really getting way out there. See, that's when I seen a few of these things come through, and then I went and checked out your site, and I said, my golly gee whiz, you know, I watched a couple of these 911 tapes, and none of this stuff is addressed. Zero, zip, nada.
I think they mainly focus on the whodunit, or the, you know, who's, he said, she said, who said, what said, that's what I call it. But it distracts away from looking at what happened. And you first have to start with, you know, was the body shot to death or poisoned to death? You know, in a regular murder investigation, you look at what happened first before you mm-hmm. charge somebody with a crime.
Absolutely.
What happened is just bizarre.
The other thing that just caught my attention, there was a level 3 hurricane sitting off of New York on 911, and I'd never heard of that before.
Isn't that interesting? It wasn't on the morning news. They showed, I have a couple of weather maps from that morning. You know, I don't know if it was Al Roker or whoever it is showing the CBS and an NBC one, network station. And they show in the continent, they show that patch of the ocean where it should be, but there's no hurricane there. And, someone might, you know, say, well, you know, it wasn't going to come ashore, so why should they alert anybody? How could they be so sure that it wasn't going to come ashore?
Yeah, that somebody's controlling it. Hold that thought. We'll be back here. Just, oh, God, I tell you. Unbelievable. Well, we're back for break, and I have Dr. Wood, and I've got two immediate questions. If we had a hurricane, number 1, a level 3, is that not high enough, number 1, to cause problems? Had it came to shore, and number 2 is how far off the coast of New York was that hurricane or the center of it?
Well, it's not about is it going to come ashore. If it just sits, you know, parks outside of New York and sits there for too long, there are going to be storm surges that cause flooding. JFK Airport is at sea level. It's right there, you know, on the southern side of Long Island. We have, you know, Manhattan that is at sea level with very limited ways of evacuating. So it, just in case it comes ashore, you want to give people a head start, those who are, you know, extra worried and want to make sure that they, you know, make a run for it just in case. You know, because otherwise, if it is going to flood out things, how long do people have to evacuate? Yeah, how long did it take to evacuate New Orleans? couple of days at least, nonstop. So in some place like New York with limited exits for traffic, you know, during rush hour, you need to warn the people, you know, like I know someone who recently when Hurricane Bill was headed up there and it looked like it was following the same path, they rented a car just to make sure they had access to leave just in case. But people on 9/11 or before 9/11 weren't given that warning. And it doesn't matter if they know for sure if it's going to come ashore or not. The fact that it's just in the neighborhood, there's going to be high seas and flooding.
Well, level three is high enough up the level, number one, that you would pay attention to that level of a hurricane, right?
Yes, it was level three actually the night before. The day before that, it went from a tropical storm to a category three in one day. And it pulled right up like it was pulling up to a chalk line and stopped, and then it spread out. You know how a figure skater spreads their arms out and slows down?
Mm-hmm.
So it slowed down, but it covered a much wider area. So if you look at the, you know, force under the curve, you have just as much strength. But what was significant is it's not necessarily where the cloud cover is, but outside of the cloud cover is an interesting issue. There are people with arthritis who say that they sense when a storm is coming. They can feel it. There's some electrical change in the air, in the environment. They can sense something. Also, before, you know, in the front of a storm, in front of that, you get dry thunder. There's some electrical activity that's causing that.
Mm-hmm.
On 9/11, there was thunder reported at JFK Airport, at LaGuardia Airport, and at Newark Airport. Those are all surrounding Manhattan. So we have evidence of field effects from the hurricane.
Okay.
It was some sort of environmental change going on at that time,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty peculiar. That's a piece of evidence. That's, you know, a matter of fact. We don't know for sure what it was doing, but we know that indeed there were effects there. And for some reason, we weren't being told about this.
Do you think there's any correlation between the 911, what happened to the buildings, and the hurricane?
Well, before I discovered the hurricane, you know, I had categorized all these different types of evidence. I didn't know what caused it, but I knew it was some sort of interference because of these patterns of, and it was not a a regular thermal heat. Sounds like we need a break.
We do. We're going to go on break again.
Okay.
We'll be back here. We're going to the top of the hour, and stay tuned, and then we're going to get to Hutchinson Effect and Tesla.
With recent